Okay. In Bhagavad Gita, 2:45, Krishna advised Arjuna to become transcendental to the material activities, empowered by the three modes of material nature. Vaigunya Vishaya Veda Nice Vaigunya Babarjuna. He only quoted the beginning. Thank you for your enthusiasm. The purpose of Vedic study is to transcend the activities of the three modes of material nature. Of course, in the material world, the mode of goodness is accepted as the best. And one can be promoted to the higher planetary systems by being on the sattva guna platform. However, that is not perfection. One must come to the conclusion that even the sattva guna platform is also not good. One may dream that he's become a king with a good family, wife and children, but immediately at the end of the dream, he comes to the conclusion that it is false. Similarly, all kinds of material happiness are undesirable for a person who wants spiritual salvation. If a person does not come to the conclusion that he has nothing to do with any kind of material happiness, he cannot come to the platform of understanding the absolute truth of Tattva Jnana. That's an important line. If a person does not come to the understanding that he has nothing to do with any kind of material happiness, he cannot come to the platform of understanding the absolute truth of Tattva Jnana. Karmis, Gyanis, and Yogis are after some material elevation. Karmis work hard day and night for some bodily comfort. And the Gyanis simply speculate about how to get out of the entanglement of karma and merge into the Brahman folds. The Yogis are very much addicted to the acquisition of material perfection and magical powers. All of them are trying to become materially perfect. But the devotee very easily comes to the platform of Nirguna, which means being beyond the three modes, in devotional service. And consequently, for the devotee, the results of karma, jnana, and yoga become very insignificant. Therefore, only the devotee is on the platform of Tattva Jnana and not the others. Of course, the Gyanis' position is better than that of becoming, but that position is also insufficient. The Jnani must actually become liberated, and after liberation, he may be situated in devotional service. Mad Bhaktin Mamate. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sanatale Vishnu Deva Pagyata Swami Tanam Stay Saraswati Vishnu Bhurvam Chayana Kira Seishu Nani Paskata Vishnu Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Dhanam Shri Aveta Gradha Shri Masani Gora Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Vantagaptu Vishcha Kupasam Vishnu The verse again, a dream becomes automatically known to a person as false and immaterial, and simply one eventually realizes that material happiness in this life or the next, on this planet or a higher planet, is insignificant. When one realizes this, the Vedas, although an excellent source, are insufficient to bring about direct knowledge of the truth. So this is an important verse because it's exposing material happiness as illusory. So most people don't consider material happiness as illusory. They consider it as real. And therefore, they try to acquire by all kinds of means. So how to understand it's illusory. There's different ways. One verse that came to mind, which is a very striking verse, is actually the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which I thought I would read. It's also nice to remember how the Bhagavatam starts out. It's actually many lines long, only the part that deals with the topic here. Oh, my Lord Shri Krishna, Son of Vasudeva, or all pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. And he continues glorifying the Lord by saying, only because of him, actually, by him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen in water. In other words, like a mirage. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. So we are living in a virtual reality. We have a virtual body, virtual mind, and we think it's all very real because we've been in this virtual reality so long we forgot that we entered it. And it's so complete. We completely identify ourselves with each body we have. Although we've had many, many, probably hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of different material bodies, but in each particular body, by the influence of the false ego, we are convinced that this body is me, and that the temporary happiness that we perceive through the senses of this body is actual, real happiness. And it's just a creation of the virtual reality created by the amazing computer scientist, the personality of God, who's created such a virtual reality that very few people actually understand that it is a virtual reality. We get to learn the secrets from the pure devotee who is able to understand this great truth. So one way we understand that it's unreal is because it's temporary. Sometimes Prabhupada would explain that at night we dream, and in that dream we have another body, and we have another identity, and we do different things, and that at the end of the night that dream is over. And then we have our daydream, where we dream, we have a certain identity, and certain things we have to do, and all this. And then at the end of our life, actually, this dream becomes over. Then we get a new body, and we start a new dream, thinking that we're another body, we have other duties and relationships to that body. And so, in this conception, the greatest happiness one can experience is material happiness that's mixed with material distress and which comes to an end. So that's the best anybody out there is able to get. They are forced to suffer the miseries of birth, death, disease, and old age. The miseries caused by the mind and body, the miseries caused by other living entities, the miseries caused by the demigods. They suffer these seven things, and they have a little bit of happiness, which varies. On the higher planets, there's more, and on the lower planets, there's less. And basically, it's a mixture. So, the soul exists beyond the changing mind, the changing body. It actually has absolutely nothing to do with the happiness and distress of the material world. It's just like a dream, which is especially reassuring when we're having a very bad time. We're having a nightmare. Our existence is sometimes like a nightmare, but it's reassuring when realize actually that this isn't the ultimate. Sometimes people have a very bad life and they they end up deciding to commit suicide and end it all. But of course that's an illusion, because they just get another life. And because it's a sinful activity to destroy your material body, they suffer more in the next life. Whereas if they just thought, well, some lives are better than others, I'll just wait this one out, maybe the next one will be better. It actually would be better, because by tolerating the misery, we're reducing our sinful reactions, so we come to a higher level. By tolerating the happiness, we reduce our pious reactions. By tolerating the miseries, we reduce our sinful reactions. And if we just engage in devotional service, we eventually come to the point of no reactions. And we go to the spiritual world. So beyond this temporary happiness mixed with temporary distress, there's another kind of happiness, which people in general don't know about, but which Krishna talks about in different places in the Bhagavad Gita. Talks about it in the fifth chapter, for example. It says in 5:21, such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always entranced, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for it concentrates on the Supreme. So there's another kind of happiness which is unlimited, that's attained by concentration on the Supreme. That's the topic of Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas. And then he continues, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses, or some kundalini pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. Because the wise man knows that by delighting in this, I'm going to be disappointed. There's a nice description of happiness in the mode of passion. Vishayendriya samyoga is born of contact between the senses and their objects. Yanta agre mitopamam, in the beginning, it's just like nectar. Parname it visham ila, but at the end, it's like poison. Tatsukam rajasamskritam, such as happiness in the mode of passion. So that's, everyone is very excited about that happiness in the mode of passion, because people in the mode of passion, they remember the nectar at the beginning. The people in the mode of goodness, they remember the poison at the end. And they say, no thanks, I'm not interested. And you can go, if you really want, you can do it, but not interested. So, there's other verses that talk about this unlimited happiness in the Gita. I used to use this one to try to sell the Gita. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness. Boundless transcendental. Realize the transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. So this is a state of happiness that you don't come down from. As they used to advertise in 1966, stay high forever. And this isn't just a slogan. It's actually a reality. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This, indeed, is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So you become free from all material miseries, and you experience this boundless transcendental happiness. It's a very, very good deal. Krishna has something substantial to offer. So, there's other verses too. That was 6:20 to 23. says in in 27 and 28 of chapter 6, the yogi whose mind is fixed on me rarely attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He's beyond the mode of passion. He realizes qualitative identity with the Supreme, and thus he's freed from his all reactions to past deeds. Thus the self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness and transcendental loving service to the Lord. So we have to be convinced about the reality of this secure happiness. It's mentioned also in the Nectar of Devotion, there's three kinds of happiness. There's the material happiness, there's the happiness of realizing oneself to be one with the Supreme, and then there's the happiness of pure devotional service. And those who've actually experienced all three, they say that the happiness of pure devotional service is superior. So we have to go with what they say, right? Because they've experienced all three. They've only experienced material happiness. And so, I thought it was interesting, the last line in the verse, when one realizes this insignificance of material happiness, the Vedas, although an excellent source, are insufficient to bring about direct knowledge of the truth. That was interesting to me. It reminded me how basically the Vedas bring us to the platform of surrender unto the Lord, and by surrendering unto the Lord, we attain direct knowledge of the truth. There's these two verses in the Gita. Tesham satat yuktanam bhajatam pritipuru bhakkantadam yuvam yogantam nenam mamu prayantate. Tesham those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Bestow them special mercy, I dwelling in your hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So for one who is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, this direct knowledge of the truth is supplied directly by Krishna. And this purport Prabhupada is talking about the karmics, jnanis, and yogis, and how they're always busy trying to attain perfection. It reminded me of a verse I just read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Satale Shanta Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta. Describes how the karmis, jnanis, and yogis, because they're lusty after some kind of more or less material perfection, they're not peaceful. Whereas the devotee of the Lord, because he's desireless, is actually in a state of peace. Basically, that all the devotee wants is to be engaged in devotional service, and all the devotee is doing is being engaged in devotional service. So he's very happy having attained his goal already. Because there's actually no difference between the Lord and his devotional service. So one who is completely absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord has already attained the Lord. So he's very peaceful because he has no object to attain. He's, by his devotional service, he's feeling connected with Krishna. That's the secret, is to connect with Krishna through devotional service, which is why we, this place is called the Bhakti Center. So this is what we're the main teaching, that this is how we connect with the source of all existence. And we experience a real happiness through our connection to Krishna that makes all other happiness seem insignificant. Whether it's the happiness here or the happiness on another planet, or happiness in this life or the happiness in the next life, the happiness of pure devotional service, as it brings us directly in contact with Krishna, is the supreme happiness. So, let's see if there's anything else. One other verse that came to mind as I was reading the purport, I thought it was relevant. 328, Tate Shu Mahavaho, Gunaka, Gunabhagyo, Gunabhagyam Sam, Idunabhagyam Sanjay. One whose analogy allows the truth, Almighty Arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. So one who actually knows the absolute truth basically knows that sense gratification is a waste of time and doesn't endeavor for it. He just endeavors for contacting Krishna and experiencing the joy of devotional service. So does anybody have any questions, comments, or yes, sir?
Well, sometimes when you see, you know, you're slowly rising to the mode of goodness, like you're regulated, you know, a certain time you wake up, a certain time you do these things, there's a tendency to get proud. You're doing it.
Sorry, I was just asking, sometimes when you rise to the mode of goodness, like, you know, you wake up at this particular time, you do this particular thing at this particular time, and you're very regulated, you know, there's a tendency to get proud. That you are doing it and others are not doing it. So how to not get
basically it? The one way of not getting proud is to meditate on the people who are doing better than you. If you meditate on all the people who are doing worse than you, and how are you doing better than them, then you'll get proud. But if you meditate on that, how the Rupa Goswami slept 2 hours at night, and sometimes not even that, you know. You know, Raghunath Das Goswami had a little bit of buttered milk every other day, and chanted 64 rounds, offered obeisances to 2,000 Vaishnavas, 1,000 times of the deities, read the glories of, spoke the glories of Lord Chaitanya to the devotees for 3 hours a day. So, you know, if you meditate on the people who are on a higher level, you can see why. Maybe I can regulate my life, but my absorption in Krishna consciousness is not so great and spontaneous as the people who are fully realized. So I have a ways to go. And then you can pray that the people in a superior position for their mercy. Even this verse talks about how the mode of goodness isn't sufficient.
Yeah.
So, yes?
Yeah, about 60 times in the class you mentioned the word happiness, happiness, happiness.
Really?
The happiness of devotional service. And, one of the things I notice about preaching is that, like Krishna says, no one is more dear to me than one who preaches this message.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody is preaching, because they're pleasing Krishna, they're experiencing an amazing happiness.
Mm-hmm.
You see a person fired up doing book distribution, or mm-hmm. just like joyfully, you know, pouring their heart out in the kirtan. There's an unmistakable experience that they're having.
Mm.
And in addition to what they're saying having an impact on the person who's hearing, the person who's hearing sees this joyful, enthusiastic person, and then because they're pleasing Krishna, they're satisfied and experiencing happiness, you know. So it's pretty amazing. So one thing I will relish in class is when devotees talk about the little victories we have each day, things that would please Krishna. A couple of days ago, there were 5 or 6 people came out to help with the meal distribution, do some service. And the two of them, a boy and a girl, young couple, and I spoke to them when they came to the kitchen, and we were talking while they were putting icing on the cake and cutting and loading up the truck, and we talked to them in the truck on the way over, and when we talked to them at the distribution, and then we talked to them in the vehicle on the way back, and then back at the kitchen, and I said, well, where did you guys come from anyway? And I was thinking, you're staying with the guest program, you come from the Bhakti Center. And they said, well, this is one of Krishna's victories. They said, well, 8 years ago, her mother and father stayed with the guest program.
Yeah.
And they had such a great experience. They said, when you go to New York, you should go there and help with them, do some service with God.
Then, wow.
That was like 8 years ago, their mother had such an experience. And she told you have to do this. You know, I didn't realize, like, you know, they were like, you know, just eating it up, everything we had to say, and it was just such a spontaneously joyful thing. And then when they told me that, I almost like fell over. You know, that something you could do so long ago could have an impact on somebody, and that could have an impact on somebody else, and then they could come, and then they could, you know, because, you know, Jennifer didn't speak to everybody. When you all of a sudden, when there are breakthrough moments, and somebody's like really hungry to hear, open, and you know, feeling nourished and inspired by what we have to share with them, it's so wonderful, you know, because Krishna's pleased. It's so wonderful that we feel high by it. And one other thing, a little victory for Krishna. We're in this new building we're taking care of over on 8th Avenue, and we moved in there, and there were like all these, you know, dysfunctional people living there already. One of them has actually been coming over. He's come about probably 25 times already to come and help with the meal distribution. And, you know, little by little, a little talking, a little questioning. And then yesterday, I had this amazing breakthrough conversation with him where he was really, you know, really, really, it was like after the whole program was over and I was about to move the vehicle, and, you know, he really, really could see something happened. Something happened inside of him where he leaning in, you know, because of the experience taking prasadam, coming and doing service, hearing a question here. And I thought, well, you know, this isn't so. And then I realized, well, this is a sincere and intelligent person, you know, and I gave him a book. He had come 20 times before I gave him a book. You know, you have to understand, we were really kind of patient about this. And he was like, you know, took that book, you know, like he was taking it right into his heart, you know. And he asked, you know, he was asking at that point, well, what does one do to actually, what is the point when one joins the Krishna consciousness movement? And how does that take place? And, you know, he talked about the concept of guru. He's coming to the morning program tomorrow. And I was like, when you see people coming from so far, you know, out of a periphery of, you know, contact with Krishna consciousness, to the point of, you know, experiencing prasadam, meeting people, doing service, acquiring some discipline, you know, sitting beside another. I think Krishna's pleasing. It's interesting to see how Krishna works in the course of time. Progressively, like it says in the Bible, don't think I will complete the good work I've begun. Krishna's working in so many people's lives. And sometimes he lets you see it. And he like works through you and allows you to see how this miracle takes place. Like the heart starts to open like a flower, and people start to drop off in the promoted quality of life and fruitive activity and really have faith. Anybody has any other experiences or visions or, you know, victories that Krishna showed, I'm sure every day you have dozens and dozens of these things happening.
Right. One thing, one thing that comes to mind is how, you know, we always see people that walk by the Harinam, and you know they become so happy, and they're just like, wow, I haven't seen you guys in 20 years, or I haven't seen you guys since I was 17. You know, so you see how much of an impact it had on that person, that even 30, 40 years later, they see us and they're just like, wow, I can't believe you guys are still here.
Right.
Just
see people walking
out
by.
Yeah, instantly comes out. You see how deep it actually impacted me.
There was one man yesterday when we were distributing, and he was across the street, and I caught one of them. You know, and he went down the street. Then later I saw him at the curb on the other side of the street, and I said, well, we went into the park. And then later he came down the street this way, and he was like, just kind of like trying to look at what, you know, he could be like a sharp circling. He didn't actually ever take the shot. But there was something there, you know, that look, that interest, that curiosity, that, you know, that Krishna was drawing to him, you know, just really, you know, like a fish, you know. So wonderful. And the Harinam is really like that, because you know, they can't ignore it. And even if they don't look at it, they can't not look at it if they didn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking at that. I'm not looking at that.
There's one lady yesterday who stopped and listened for like 5 or 10 minutes, and I asked her if she had encountered it before, and she said, "Of course, I'm a New Yorker." And she listened, and she felt she was becoming recharged by hearing it, you know.
Wow.
And then, so I have the little pamphlet I'm chanting, and she'd never gotten it.
What?
Which was amazing because she heard it many times and she
right.
liked to hear it. And then I wrote on the Bhakti Center card, you know, 7 to 9 Thursday, and then gave it to her. I told her, actually, we do this every week.
It's good to invite them here. It's so nice. Yeah. Harinam is near here. That
yeah.
the devotees are here for the morning program. That there are other kinds of programs in a way, you know. And that was another step, you know. Besides that initial, you know, glance of curiosity. And of course, if they meet Krishna, they're looking for even a second.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
oh,
well, this guy's from another.
I got
planet.
It.
Not in from here.
Once I was, when I'm going to Florida today, and I dance during the Krishna kirtan, you know, and one girl said that I was the happiest person she'd ever met. So I tried to explain that this is a process by which anyone can become, you know, supremely happy. But it was curious to me that she wasn't willing to, you know, find out more about it. You know, yeah, you know, like inquire more about it. But that's the thing that they don't, when they see us, they don't realize actually that this is for everybody, and And if they were doing it, they would be as happy as we are. You know, they think something, you know, they can't identify, because they're attached to the material conception of their self, they can't see themselves as doing it and being happy, but we can see themselves as doing it and being happy.
That's very true.
Hare Krishna.
I just wanted to add something since you're leaving today. I just wanted to say some words of appreciation for you. take advantage that you can't escape.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like what the girl said, you're definitely like one of the happiest people that like I've ever met. And I've always admired how you even dance while you're chanting Japa. Which is amazing. Seriously, like I remember one time, because I met Krishna Kripa Prabhu in Gainesville, I've known him for years, I don't know.
And she was a physics student at the University of Florida and eating Krishna lunch.
I remember one day during Krishna, at Krishna house, we have lunch and Kalakanta Prabhu would usually read for us when we were Rita. One day Kalakanta Prabhu wasn't there, so Krishna Prabhu read. And he had just come back from New York and he was reading. It was just so happened to be the pastime where they had done the first Harinam at Tampa Square Park. So we're reading through Lilamrita, and Krishna Kripa Prabhu was reading. He just started crying, like as he was speaking, as he was reading, he was just weeping, of, because he had just experienced doing Harinam here in New York and then coming back and then reading this and then Guru Maharaj wrote the book and just everything, and I was so touched by the depth of your love and appreciation for Harinam, for Srila Prabhupada, and for your Guru Maharaj, and it's something that, like, I hope that I can have, like, even a drop of in my life, and I'm sure many of us feel the same way, to be able to have your compassion and sincerity. So thank you, Prabhu, for always being such a wonderful example for all of us.
And the pastimes in this glorious side are so special and sweet. So many magical things happen. So, because my Guru Maharaj was there and experiencing them, when he writes to that, it's like, wow.
Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Thank you for coming to Krishna Lunch and coming to Krishna House, learning the Radhanga, learning the kirtans. Also, you come in first and second machine. Keep up the good work. So thank you all for your association. It's been wonderful to have this bhakti center here in New York. Beautiful worship of Sri Shiva and Muralidhara, which is based in three places, and this is the only place where I have Radha Krishna deities to see every day. Kornitani, Gainesville, and Ponsatapa, Newcastle. It's a treat for the eyes. Yes.
Sometimes hearing the classes here, seeing the kirtan, seeing how beautiful Radha and Muralidhara are being taken care of, you know, when I go outside, I feel like I'm grabbing somebody and saying, "Listen, you just got to come. You've got to
come."
You can't do that. You just can't just like drag them in here like screaming. Drag them in here screaming. Give them a chance to like kind of like gently.
So these other ways of going
out there, you know, letting them stick their toe in the water a little bit. Sooner or later they'll get here.
Probably
you want to say something?
I know this gentleman wants to blow the conch shell, and it's 10 minutes after 8. So you can ask me later, or you can write me at kk@krishna.com. Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you.